Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, July the 18th, 2023, in case you were wondering. And again, as always, we appreciate you listening to all of our American Family Radio shows, but thank you for joining us for this Today's Issues program. Good morning, Ed Battagliano.
Hey, good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Good morning, Tim.
Ray Pritchard's normally on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but Brent Creeley, our producer, would you tell us why Ray's been a no-show so much recently?
He's out preaching the gospel.
I'll throw that one at me, okay? So now I can't say anything critical because it would be critical of him preaching the gospel. Yeah, no, we love Brother Ray, and he is a wonderful Bible teacher, and so I'm glad he's going to the camps and so forth. But when is he going to be back on the show?
It'll be a couple of weeks before he's back. He announced last week that it was the next 5 out of the 7 weeks he's going to be out. So it's going to be a little while.
I don't think we voted on this. Huh? You fellas remember voting on this?
No. And the thing is, now, ordinarily, Ray Pritchard is busier during the summer.
Yes, he is.
But I don't remember that him being this busy during the summer. So in terms of teaching the Bible, that's a good sign. That means lots of people want the Bible to be taught. But, you know, Ray, if you're listening, brother, there are other people out there who can teach.
Give it up.
Doesn't have to all
give somebody
on
else
you.
A chance, Ray. Dominating Bible teaching all across America. Goodness sakes. You know, I think text him, Brent, not right now, but you text him and tell him we'd like to have him on remotely. He didn't have to stay on the whole show. We want to hold him accountable for what he's out there doing or says he's doing. So would you make that happen? All right. Today on this here show, Brother Kirk Cameron, yes, the actor, will be with us in 8 minutes. That's the plan. Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, a constitutional attorney, and Jenna is on with us every other week. Hopefully, she'll be on with us at the bottom of the hour. We'll just have to wait and see about that. Fred, what's leading the news this morning?
Well, if you go to our website, afn.net, you will see this as the breaking news. U.S. soldier believed to be in North Korea custody. Here's what we know at this hour. Apparently, this U.S. soldier was on a private tour of the demilitarized zone, that is that zone between South Korea and North Korea. The story is that he was on a private tour. He was in civilian clothing. And Fox News is reporting in just the last few minutes that this young soldier broke away from the tour group. He is now in North Korea. The headline says he is in North Korean custody. That's basically what we know at this hour. It is, when you first read this story, this all occurred Tuesday afternoon, North Korean time. It is kind of strange that a person touring the demilitarized zone, being a U.S. soldier, civilian clothes, would break away. Now, again, I'm quoting Fox News. This is what they are hearing from their officials, their sources. Did he break away just because he wanted to get a bit closer to the North Korean border? Did he break away with other intents? So there's a lot of mystery in this story right now. We'll keep tabs on it and see what happens as the day rolls along.
So he was he in uniform?
No.
No, he's plain clothes.
Civilian clothes.
On the tour.
On a private tour. And there apparently are private tours every day of the militarized zone.
Yeah, that's Well, there's a lot of unanswered questions there.
There
I
is.
You should say.
Yeah,
there is.
That we'll just have to wait and see about that. How much distance is there in the DMZ, what's called the DMZ? Do you know, Ed?
I don't. I know it's close enough where they could shell each other.
They can see each other, right? The North Koreans and South Koreans.
I think they can with binoculars.
It's 154 miles long. I'm not sure how deep it is, mm-hmm. that zone.
Well, it's typing it in right now, so we're about to find an answer.
Okay, the demilitarized zone separates North and South Korea, located about 31 miles north of Seoul. The fortified area extends 160 miles across. So 31 miles north of Seoul, I know that in terms of artillery and rockets, the North Koreans could reach the capital city of Seoul, South Korea. So I'm trying to find out. I do not see how deep it is, which is what...
That would be the no man's land, so to speak, right?
Right.
Yes, Brent.
According to Wikipedia, which, you know, take that with
what it's worth,
yes, says it's 2.5 miles deep.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's not much.
Well, binoculars, you're right. You can see that. But so he was this American soldier was in that area?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We'll see what transpires there.
It's hard to believe somebody would from the free West would want to go to North Korea because they're not going to be treated well.
You don't defect to North Korea.
I don't think you defect to North Korea. So I who knows? Maybe he was trying to get a closer look or whatever. But anyway, it's a strange one.
Well, the North Korean dictator could be Kim Jong-un. Is that his name?
Kim Jong-un.
He could be just take any American soldier and then try to use them as a negotiating tool for something that he wants.
They've done that before.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
All right, Fred, next story.
Well, the next story is just as big, or some people may say even bigger. Former President Donald Trump letting be known on his social media platform this morning that he has received a letter from the Justice Department that he is now a target of the department's investigation into efforts to undo the results of the 2020 presidential election. So I've just been listening to an interview with Jonathan Turley, constitutional expert that Fox News uses a lot. He says these letters are sent out near the end or at the end of an investigation, a probe. The people who get this letter are usually the people who are indicted and are arrested. All right. This could happen then any day. These letters, and Turley is familiar with these form letters, I guess. The targets of the letters can opt to go to the grand jury. And with the grand jury, you're not allowed to have your lawyer. You can leave the grand jury and go out and ask questions of your lawyer, but you can't have your lawyer present. So Donald Trump is confirming this morning, he said he got it around dinner time on Sunday evening. And so we'll have to wait and see. But the development on this apparently will happen within days. If he is going to be indicted, if he is going to be arrested and indicted, this could happen even before the end of this week.
And did you already tell our audience what the investigation was about?
Well, again, listening to Turley, he's wondering, okay, what is the evidence that the Justice Department says warrants Mr. Trump to be indicted, to be arrested?
But it's about January 6th.
It's about January 6th. Turley is wondering, are they using the speech that the president gave on that day, January 6th, where obviously he vigorously was disputing the results of the election? Among other things, the former president urged the people who were gathered there in Washington to go peacefully up to Capitol Hill and to make their feelings known about this. Turley is saying if they're going to use if they're going to isolate their charges to what he said, Trump said in that speech. Turley doesn't believe that holds legal waters because it's First Amendment. It's just Trump saying, this is my opinion of the results of the election. And he said, go peacefully. Turley doesn't think that would be indictable. Is there something else that the special prosecutor, Jack Smith, has on Donald Trump? We don't know.
We talked about this a little bit before the show started because this is a new development. This is a breaking story. I don't know how in the world you get a grand jury indictment of President Trump for January 6th. I'm just being honest. Unless there is something that none of us know about that day. Listen, in terms of people saying, I don't believe the results of the election, I think it's fake. I think there was fraud. Let's talk about the 2000 election.
Yes.
Let's talk about what Democrats said about that. Let's talk about what Hillary Clinton said in 2016. Mm-hmm. All right. So it is not uncommon for people to cry foul. Second of all, there was a lot that happened during the 2020 election, the election day, and the counting of it that appeared suspicious to a lot of people. And there are a lot of people to this day that think there were shenanigans and there were things going on, even if you don't talk about, the stopping the counting and then picking it back up. You talk about ballot harvesting and these drop boxes. Okay, there was a lot of stuff that was going on. So I don't know how in the world you can charge President Trump with something criminal unless there's something we don't know.
Can I read a few comments? I'm going to be the liberal now.
Okay.
This is usually left to Ed.
Yes, that's right.
All right. My opinion about, before I read these comments from President Trump on that day, my opinion was, I don't know about the legal aspects of this. I thought it was highly irresponsible of President Trump to have a rally, get all those people worked up, and then send them down to the Capitol building right next to where the proceedings were going on. That's playing with fire. And we see what happened on that day.
Right.
Now, every one of those folks on January 6th who went into the Capitol building, and there's a lot of stories about that doors were opened, and I think a lot of people went in there didn't intend to do any harm.
Right.
And maybe they were misled to think they were being welcomed in, although I wouldn't have gone in had I been there because I'm thinking they've got it closed.
Right.
It's closed for a reason. You don't go in there when it's closed. But anyway, so I just thought sending folks down there. Remember, President Trump said, go down there. And then he said, I'm going with you.
Right.
And then he didn't show up at the Capitol.
And he did say, didn't he, we're going to fight like.
Well, I'm just going to, okay, try to take an objective view of this when I read these comments. And again, I don't know about the legal aspects of this, and I would totally agree with everybody who says President Trump's been under unfair harassment for a long time. Right. I completely agree with this.
Yeah.
But here are the things that he said, which if you're somebody who doesn't maybe agree with Donald Trump's politics, you might say, well, this is problematic. He said, I'm going to quote here, and I'm going to use a word that he used on that day. Okay. He said, and we fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Then he said, all of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved, end quote. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about. We will stop the steal. And then he said, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. and you have to show strength, and you have to be strong, end of quote. Now, if you're, you know, there's two ways to interpret that, is what I'm saying. You can interpret those words as symbolic and metaphoric and not any way physically threatening, or you would look at that and say, that's encouraging. You go stop the steal, sending them down there. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can see how that would be, that could be interpreted as, what would you, inciting people?
Well, here's the thing. It's certainly is strong language. It could be interpreted as inciting, but in order for there's two different issues. So the one we're talking about is can you prove that President Trump knew what they were going to do? That
no.
he was yeah. You to no. me, I don't see how you can prove
that. I agree with you on that. I agree with you. I don't think President Trump,
I don't think President Trump wanted them to storm the Capitol. I think what he wanted, this is my honest opinion. I think the language was strong. I think President Trump believed the election had been stolen. When he told those people to go down there, he wanted them to protest. He did say protest peacefully. He wanted them to make noise so that the members of Congress, Vice President Pence, and so on and so forth, would realize that they're not going to get away with it, kind of thing.
Stop the steal.
I don't think President Trump wanted them to raid it, go into Nancy Pelosi's office, or to do anything physical to harm the people. And to me, that's what the Department of Justice has
to do. But how do you stop the steal?
Well, you let the members of Congress know, hey, we're not going to take this.
By standing outside the Capitol and hold signs?
And yelling. And if they're, you know, yelling? There's thousands and... I think he wanted the members of Congress to know they weren't going to get away with it.
All I'm saying is, you heard me read those quotes.
Yeah.
If you hate Donald Trump,
right,
you could very well make the case that he's inciting a riot. I'm not saying I agree with that necessarily. I don't know about the legalities. I'm just saying when you read what I read, and then you send those people down there all worked up and emotional. You know what? And they act on and they get carried away. That's some people would say. I guess Jack Smith, the prosecutor, is going to say there's a connection there.
Yeah.
So we'll just have to wait and see what the indictment.
Yeah.
What the indictment says. To me, it's almost like sending an alcoholic into a bar and say, "Don't drink." Huh? You just sit there and don't drink. In other words, they're worked up. They're impassioned. They're told, go stop the steal. We're never going to quit fighting.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's dangerous. That's dangerous to send people down there under those circumstances in my
But if opinion. He was indicted for those reasons,
yeah,
then it sets, I think, a very dangerous precedent for all politicians.
Yeah.
Because you're holding the politician accountable for how people react.
Yeah. Right. Like I said, everybody that day is responsible for their own actions. That's America. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, those January 6th folks, though, have been terribly mistreated.
Yes.
As Sandy Rios has documented. By the way, Sandy's going to be hosting today for Bishop Jackson. We haven't even talked about that. Sandy's done an excellent job of documenting their plight and their circumstances. So, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what's in the indictment.
Yeah.
But there isn't an indictment yet.
No, not yet.
There's a letter that the
to President Trump saying you're Trump, a target.
You are a target.
But and you're saying that's only sent if there's an imminent indictment.
That's what Jonathan Turley says, the legal
And expert. You trust Jonathan Turley.
Yeah, he's pretty accurate.
I do, too. he's an excellent legal scholar. Mm-hmm. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Joining us now is our good friend Kirk Cameron, actor and producer and best-selling author, and also can build a campfire. with the best of them. He joins us now. Good morning, Kirk.
Hey, Tim, great to be talking with you guys. Man, I am shocked that you admitted that you were a good friend of mine publicly. You know, it's not, I know you try to keep your distance from me. I'm a bit of a troublemaker.
Yeah. Kirk, I wouldn't read anything into that. He's publicly said that he's friends with me,
right?
And that's just as damaging.
Yeah.
So
I don't say that I'm publicly friends with Tim for obvious reasons, but I'm flattered. That
they're obvious reasons, are they? Okay, then. Where are you at? You at home today?
You know, I can't disclose my location. I've been running for 10 years.
You're not in the U.S. Capitol, right?
No, I'm not. I'm actually in Tennessee right now.
January 18th, July 18th. Okay, so you're in Tennessee right now. When last we spoke, you were on your library tour in America about the new book you got out. Where does that? Tell us about the book and how's the tour going?
It's going fantastic. So for those who aren't familiar with it, back at Christmas time, I wrote a book called As You Grow, Teaching Kids the Value of Biblical Wisdom and How to Grow the Fruit of the Spirit Through the Seasons of Their Life. I wanted to do a public library story time reading of my book, and I was denied by over 50 woke libraries that previously held drag queen story hours. So, you know, maybe if I had shown up in fishnet stockings with a name like Kirk Dazzle Glamoroni, they would have let me in.
I wouldn't have attended.
Bad image.
But didn't need that.
But I pushed back, and I reminded them that this is the United States of America built on biblical values and the Bill of Rights. And if they continued with their discrimination, I would assert my constitutional rights in court. Well, they caved, and we went to these libraries and were greeted by thousands, literally 3,000 parents and children at public libraries, overwhelming six floors, wanting to hear these books of Christian and conservative values. So we've toured the country and gone to L.A., San Francisco, D.C., New York, Atlanta, all of these places, read these books, and parents are being encouraged and inspired and empowered to take back the education of their children and stand up against this monster called progressivism. And now I've got a new book out. It's called Pride Comes Before the Fall. It's teaching kids about humility, and it came out on June 1st, which is the first day of the so-called Pride Month. And I'm doing what I can to try to be a light out there, a North Star, so to speak, to remind parents that we've got to get back to biblical American values if we want to see our children have a happy and prosperous future.
Kirk, it's Fred Jackson here. You've got an event coming up called See You at the Library on August 5th. Can you briefly describe that to us?
Yeah, there are thousands of parents and pastors, grandparents, who are hosting their own story hours around the country. And this is very exciting. So what I did is I created an event called See You at the Library. It's kind of like See You at the Pole. Remember where you'd gather at the flagpole of the public school to pray for your children and their school? Well, we're calling on all Americans to gather at the library on August 5th and read a book of Christian virtue to their children. It's easy to do. I've been doing it for the last 6 months. And if you want to join us and support this movement and send a nation to the country, go to bravebooks.com. That's bravebooks.com. And click on the tab that says See You at the Library. And we'll give you simple instructions to reserve a story reading room at your library and be a part of this nationwide event that the American Library Association is trying to stop. We've actually got the ALA trying to deny access to families to access their own public libraries paid for by taxpayer dollars. And we're going to show you how to get past that and have a successful event. We're super excited about it.
We're talking to Kirk Cameron. He's joining us from, he's on the road in Tennessee. How many of these events have you met these protesters, folks who don't like you being there, and they show up and they try to, interfere with the event?
So we've been to about 17 libraries so far, and the protesters that show up are usually pretty small in number. They're overwhelmed by the concerned parents
right,
who want
right.
their kids to have great values. And so a couple of them have gotten inside the reading rooms, but we have lots of security there to make sure all the families and the kids are safe. And, they've got their signs and they want to suggest that, we're full of hate and all these things. But really, I wish they'd just read my books. If you read them, you'd find that they're about love, joy, kindness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control. We're not concerned about the protests. If anything, it brings more attention to the events, and more people are finding out about it and want to be a part of them.
Ed?
Well, the American Library Association is an absolutely godless group that we fought for years, even in the late 90s, because they resisted efforts, for example, to put filters on the library computers, because we were concerned about kids accessing, even accidentally, but accessing pornography. And the ALA fought against that, and in their kind of library bill of rights, they believe that young people have the right to look at pornography. So it is no surprise that they were so vehement in resisting what Kirk was doing. And it just shows the divide in this country, what Kirk Cameron is doing. And by the way, folks, yes, we are speaking with the Kirk Cameron, actor, producer, best-selling author. But he's trying to get godly values back out into the public sphere, and it is no shocker that the ALA is one of the enemies of doing something not only so wholesome and not only so spiritually beneficial, but something so constitutional.
Amen. Well, Kirk, how can people get a copy of the Pride book?
You can go to bravebooks.com and get my book, Pride Comes Before the Fall, for free if you sign up for the Book of the Month Club, where a book with pro-God, pro-America values will be delivered to your kids or grandkids' door every single month. Just go to bravebooks.com.
Hey, we're in all seriousness, we're proud to be your friend, and you're a very courageous man, and we applaud what you're doing, traveling the country, bringing attention
Amen.
To the Lord. Amen, and to his values. Thank you, well, brother.
I thank God for you both and for all that you're doing. Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you. Kirk Cameron there joining us from the great state of Tennessee. We will be back momentarily with Jenna Ellis. Stay with us.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
So welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. If you want to watch the show on the internet, we have our own live video streaming service that we've had operational now for over a year. You can take advantage of that, streaming.afa.net. We will not cancel ourselves. We voted on that.
Except maybe accidentally, but certainly not on purpose.
Right. Not for saying ivermectin.
Right. Or hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah, I can't say that word very well, but thank you, Ed, for you doing that.
My pleasure, sir.
So
how I got
say the word Ed
YouTube.
Said, or you say ivermectin, or... say Dr. Fauci's short, something like that. You're not going to get canceled here, people, because it's our own video streaming service.
That's right.
Streaming.afa.net. Many of you watch on Facebook. You just go to Facebook. You type in Today's Issues, and we live video stream there. We post the stories that we discuss there as well. Today's Issues on Facebook. Well, tomorrow... this is Hollywood Week right here on on Today's Issues. We just had Kirk Cameron on, and tomorrow we've got another special guest, right, Ed?
That's right, Jim Caviezel, who is an actor. Most Christians very familiar with him, in The Passion of the Christ, but also in this summer's surprise blockbuster hit, Sound of Freedom. Jim Caviezel is the actor in a movie about Tim Ballard, who has spent his life, much of his adult life, rescuing child sex trafficking victims. And this movie, as of yesterday, over the weekend, has made $85 million. It beat the Indiana Jones movie at the box office, came in second to the new Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie. And so it has shocked Hollywood and has elicited a fair amount of criticism from leftist media, who apparently have a problem with a movie about stopping sex trafficking. But anyway, so hopefully now sometimes these actors and someone of Jim Caviezel's stature, something comes up. But as of this moment, he is scheduled to be with us tomorrow at 10:15.
Well, if something comes up, it better be good. A good doctor's excuse better or be something like that.
Well, we'll ask.
We've already told people he's going to be on.
We'll ask him for a doctor's excuse.
All right. Fred Jackson here with me, Ed Vitagliano. I'm Tim Wildman. Welcome back again to Today's Issues. Jenna Ellis joins us now. Jenna joins us, I think, every other Tuesday, most every other Tuesday here on the program. She's the host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time here on AFR. And she joins us now. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning. And, you know, I thought when you were saying this is Hollywood Week, you would have included me in that as best leading attorney in a documentary film. Because, this is actually coming out next week, the Essential Church movie in theaters. And this is with my former client, John MacArthur. And you can go to essentialchurchmovie.com. Wow. And it's an amazing film that just proclaims the gospel of Christ. I was very grateful to be in that film as well. And so we get to go to LA this weekend and actually walk the red carpet. So I'm not as familiar with that as Kirk Cameron and Jim Caviezel, but it will be quite an amazing experience.
Well, congratulations to you on that. Can I just ask a quick question before we kind of swing
sure.
back to the topic, the topics that we wanted to discuss with you? John MacArthur has, as long as I've known, been critical of Christians being involved in the political process. Do you think, and this is unfair, you didn't know this question was coming, you may not know the answer. Do you think, since he has fought these battles, especially during COVID, where he and then also with some of the LGBTQ activists who I think sued his Bible college and stuff like that, do you think he has changed at all in his view about Christians maybe being involved in the political process a little bit?
That is a great question. And the movie actually addresses that question. And I think the response to that, if I can just give you a little preview, is that it clarified not only his position, but also for Grace Community Church. And I know that his pastoral ministry really influences so many pastors and, of course, Master Seminary graduates. My mom is actually a graduate of the Master's University and a biblical counselor through their ministry. And so, you know, this has personally affected my family as well. And I've had many conversations throughout the course of representing Grace about this. And The documentary talks about the jurisdiction between the church and the state biblically, and then what the church's obligation is to make sure that the state does not encroach into the domain of the church. And that's where the legal process can come in. That's why we need to select and prefer Christians as our leaders. But then, which, you know, of course, comes from our founding fathers, not the Bible, but they were following scripture, and why Romans 13 and other areas of scripture, 1 Timothy 2, a few other places talk about praying for our leaders, making sure we understand the civil government and its role and responsibility in the life of a Christian. So yes, I think that this has further clarified their position as a whole and really given a great respect for how we should, as Christians, understand genuinely what the separation of church and state means, not how the leftists would describe it, but how the Bible clearly defines those institutions that God ordained.
All right, that's a good answer right there.
Yeah, it's a lawyer answer. It's about 3,000 words over there.
Huh? We're supposed to file briefs, yeah. But somehow they're never brief.
They're brief.
You know, it's like brief is 20 pages instead of, you know, 200.
So the name of the film is The Essential Church, and you can, and it's going to be in theaters?
It is. Theaters across the nation, okay. July 28th, so a week from Sunday. Okay. So you can go to essentialchurchmovie.com, find where the theaters are, and there's still time. They're adding screens as we speak, and so as more interest is generated, they're hoping to have about a 4 to 6 week run, and then it will be streaming as well, but they're really hoping, like The Sound of Freedom, you know, that this would be a film that just keeps growing in impact and popularity, and then more theaters will be added as you know, secular theaters right. know that they'll sell tickets.
Amen. Well, may the Lord bless that effort.
Amen.
Look forward to seeing the whole movie.
So we have two movie stars back to back.
It's Hollywood Week.
Yeah.
Right here.
Cameron and Jenna Ellis.
And
today.
Jim Caviezel. Tomorrow. If he doesn't cancel tomorrow.
Right. Dustin Hoffman on Thursday talking about his faith. No, that's too much of a stretch.
Do you know about Dustin Hoffman's?
Huh? I'm sorry, I took us on a left turn there. Yeah. Let's get back to
Jim. We're gonna left
interview
left.
Yes. Mrs. Doubtfire next.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hey, and you know what? Let me just say this.
Movie even work today?
That movie was kind of funny at the time I saw it, but I told my wife, I said, this is kind of creepy, isn't it? And now we're just 25 years later, and they're showing up dressed like that in libraries, reading to kids.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. So, Fred, what is your question for the counselor?
Hey there, Jenna. On to legal stuff of the day. Former President Donald Trump announcing on his Truth Social platform this morning that on Sunday evening he received a letter informing him that he is a target of the Justice Department's investigation into, as the AP puts it, efforts to undo the results of the 2020 presidential election. So I guess we're looking for your expertise. When someone gets a letter from the Justice Department saying they are a target, what does that mean?
Yes, well, I'm very glad that we have all decided we're not being canceled, because speaking about the 2020 election is also something that apparently can get you canceled these days. Mm. So glad that we can at least talk about that. But a target letter, I mean, this is a very standard process, and we all knew that when the Justice Department put together these special grand juries that, given the subject matter on January 6th, the 2020 election, even, you know, down in Mar-a-Lago and the indictment that did come from there, typically the requirement for the Justice Department is that they have to send someone a notice that they are a target of an investigation so that they have the opportunity to consult with their lawyer and determine if they want to come to a grand jury and testify, or if they are actually subpoenaed by the grand jury, they know that they're a target and then can consult with their attorney about pleading the fifth or saying, you know, I'm not going to appear. And the interesting thing about the grand jury contemplation is that you don't get to have your lawyer present in the grand jury. It's a totally different type of process than it would be in a trial format jury. So this is just another step in the process, and it just shows that the Justice Department is very serious about these potential pending indictments, depending on what the grand jury finds.
I don't understand the part about you can't have your lawyer present. Are you saying that President Trump has to make a personal physical appearance before a grand jury and he doesn't have legal representation?
Well, so that is part of the grand jury process, because all that's being contemplated is whether or not there is sufficient evidence under the standard of law, probable cause.
So that's how it is every day, all day across America.
Well, you don't have to appear
in grand juries.
You don't have to appear before a grand jury.
Why would he?
That's what I'd like to know. What would be the advantage?
most defendants do not go, and that's why then receiving a target letter, knowing that you would be the target of a potential indictment, you would choose not to come most of the time. And the only reason to go would potentially to give a defense or give an alibi or give, you know, if you believe that you could convince the grand jury to not move forward with an indictment. This is fully a process that is geared toward the light most favorable to the prosecution. And so indictments are from the grand jury, but a complaint and information is another way if the Justice Department or the prosecutor on whatever level decides to just file charges unilaterally. Different jurisdictions are different. Sometimes there's a requirement of a grand jury that you have to have a separate deliberative body to say, yes, we believe there's probable cause in this instance. Sometimes prosecutors want to take that extra step so there's not an appearance of bias. And sometimes that then in future proceedings, like when the defense would say we want to then file a motion to dismiss or go to a preliminary hearing to establish that there isn't probable cause to bring this, then having the grand jury can insulate the prosecution in some instances from those types of motions to dismiss. And so it's a lot of it is just process based, but grand juries, even for witnesses who are represented by counsel has to stay out. It's a totally secret process, so no one can talk about that. And you know, and just full disclosure, for the at least what's covering the 2020 election, obviously former President Trump was my client during that time. And so in terms of the merit of that, or you know, getting into the particulars, that would still fall under privilege, so I can't get into that. Like I talk about, for example, the Mar-a-Lago case, which is when I didn't represent him. But in terms of just the process, a grand jury is just part of the initial phase before you get to an actual suit that has actual charges that are filed.
Yeah, Fred, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess what a lot of folks would like to know, Jenna, and I've heard opinions on this already this morning, when they get the target letter, that is an indictment inevitable?
No, not at all. So in fact, you know, most U.S. attorneys and prosecutors don't like to go to a grand jury if they think that their case is so weak, unless they're doing that as sort of a political cover. You know, sometimes that can happen where you go to a grand jury, the grand jury doesn't indict, and you say, well, you know, that saved us then from going through the process. And there are other reasons for that. But it is still up to the grand jury. We all know that old phrase that says, you know, you can indict a ham sandwich. And so a lot of people think that that is inevitable, that because it is so skewed in favor of the prosecution, only the things that would tend to lead toward the defendant's guilt are put forward. The defense doesn't have really any opportunity unless the defendant himself testified. You can't call your own witnesses. It's not a back and forth. And so this is geared toward the prosecution, but a target letter does not mean that it's inevitable. The grand jury is a separate deliberative body to determine probable cause.
What is, you know, President Trump said that he expects to face arrest over this. That's he's speculating based on the letter that he got, I guess. But what is an arrest exactly? Because, you know, some people said he was arrested in New York on the porn star hush money case with Alvin Bragg.
Right.
You remember that? But when you say arrested, I think to the average person, you're going, that means you got handcuffs on you, right?
Right.
And same thing in with the Florida
Mar-a-Lago,
you know, case. They're not going to put handcuffs on the former president, are they?
Well, they didn't in New York, and right. That was specifically that, you know, he could show up at the first appearance. And what arrest means in terms of a legal definition is that you are in custody for purposes of being read your Fifth Amendment rights, your you know, right to an attorney and so forth, under Miranda versus Arizona, the U.S. Supreme Court case on that, and also that you don't have an option to simply leave. And so what it means that the former president was arrested was that he had to turn himself in and be in custody for a few moments until he could post bond or he's released on his own recognizance. And that was simply a legal formality. And so arrest doesn't mean like a law and order type of scenario that you might see on TV all the time where, and all of these memes where the cops were literally tackling President Trump. None of that happened. None of that's like,
all right, what about a mugshot?
They did not take a mugshot in New York. I think that at least what my good friend Alan Dershowitz was actually on my show, and he said the team should have asked for one. That would have been such a great campaign element. And, you know, so there was a lot of speculation over that. That didn't happen in New York. Usually in high profile cases where you just come to the initial appearance, you're technically in custody so that you can determine the conditions of bond if there's anything like that. But there's not, then they don't follow through with, you know, some of the mugshot portions of that. What may happen in Washington, D.C., you know, that or even Georgia, if there are indictments there, who knows? And so, you know, each of these are different jurisdictions and they have a little bit of different local rules. And we'll see if they treat the former president.
All right. I got one other question, then I'll be done here. I'm just curious, and I'm not in. Quote, indicting your profession
here. It's okay. Shakespeare hates all the lawyers.
But I got to ask you, what is President Trump paying per day for lawyer fees?
Well, that is a very good question. And there has been a lot of reports on how much of his campaign financial revenue is going toward his lawyers. And in fact, on my podcast yesterday, we were talking about this with my guest. And his thought was that the longer this continues, and if there are more indictments that drain a lot of the funds, and it, you know, these types of things are not civil lawsuits. Criminal arena is very different in terms of the spiritual and physical toll it takes on you to, you know, have something like this weighing on you. And so how that is going to impact not only the former president, but also his campaign and his strategy, I think are questions that are worth asking. And it is very expensive. If he wants really good lawyers, which he does, and for something this high profile, my understanding from at least what the media reported was that just the retainer for his lead attorney in just the New York case was around $6 million. So, you know, whether that's true or not, that sounds like it would be in the ballpark for something like this.
Wow.
Okay. So I have one last question, I guess then, unless Fred has something, we'll let you go. So this is an opinion question, obviously because of, lawyer client privilege that there may not be anything some things you can't say. So it seems to me that all these grand jury investigations and charges that are expected to come, just what you said about the amount of money this is going to cost the former president. It seems to me, so I'm going to ask you if you agree or if you think that the whole purpose, some of our listeners may think I'm being naive by asking it, is the whole purpose of this to drain Donald Trump's money so that he eventually has to drop out of the race, or keep him for the same purpose so tied up in trying to keep himself out of prison that he cannot run for president? And do you think that's what this is really all about?
Well, I think that there's no question that, you know, there are a lot of people that believe he's a political target and that there's no merit to this. I do think that was very clear in the New York case. And I think that the New York case is entirely political, meant to drain his funds. And I think that, you know, the Mar-a-Lago case is a little bit different in terms of how, you know, he might have been able to avoid all of that if he had just returned the documents. So, you know, how much that's political as much as, you know, maybe just lack of negotiation, you know, that one, I don't know. Some of these, though, with, you know, the 2020 investigation started before he announced that he was running for president again. And so I think that each of these, it would depend on who you ask and the perception of the public, which is important. And it's certainly important to campaign finance raising. But I would just caution listeners that these shouldn't all be bound up as the same thing just because they're all indictments. I think that New York versus DC versus Georgia versus Florida, all are different. And I think that that's actually what's a fascinating element of this. And so we can't totally paint it with a broad brush other than, you know, has President Trump consistently from 2015 been the most targeted person in American politics, possibly throughout history in terms of lawfare? Absolutely. And that's certainly my opinion. That was my opinion when I represented him. I came on during the first impeachment, and that was a political exercise in its entirety. So certainly there are political elements here.
Fair enough.
$6 million retainer. Good night.
I'm going to law school.
Wow. Okay, then. All right. Thank you, Jenna. We appreciate it very much. And we'll listen to you tomorrow, okay?
Sounds great. Have a great day, guys. Always a pleasure to join.
Okay, thank you. That's Jenna Ellis. Listen, people, we hired Jenna, but we didn't give her no $6 million retainer. She came for a lot less than that, although we pay her fairly. Oh, huh? We pay her radio host fees.
Yeah, her radio host fees.
Not lawyer fees. All right, we'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.